You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Jeremy Stewart.
And so we kind of put all those things together and really tried to create something that was unique from what was out there and kind of and go further against the stream and swim harder against it and really try to be something different than what was available out there, kind of all in very aspirational tones.
Jeremy is the founder of Harimari Flip-Flops, a Dallas-based sandal brand he launched in 2012 with his wife, Lila. The idea for Harimari was born of the couple's time spent in Indonesia, where they consistently disappointed with their flip-flops, marked by painful break-in periods and the same iterations of black and brown color options. Moving back to the States, they doubled down on their unhealthy obsession with fixing these issues, launching Harimari and combining color and comfort in a premium flip-flop. The Stewarts married this new footwear venture with their passion for helping kids, donating a portion of Harimari's sales to support children battling cancer. They call it Flops Fighting Cancer. Harimari has since grown its footprint to include some 1,500 retail stores covering 50 U.S. states, Mexico, Japan, Canada, and the Bahamas, in addition to the brand's own website, harimari.com. Jeremy, welcome to On Brand.
Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
You know, I love your story, but the funny part in that, and I think that there's probably many founder stories out there like that, that it was born of pain and frustration. And I think that sometimes we look for these founder's moments where it's this great big shining light bulb, and sometimes it's those points of friction that exist in the market.
Unquestionably, yeah. And I would say even ours was a point of friction that had lasted years without us really picking up on you know the trend in that direction. So for us it was a longer aha moment than most, I think, but that's true to us. We're slow on the uptake.
Well, I think you can say you were a deliberate founder, which is a good measured way of thinking about that. But as you saw this need for a high-end flip-flop, which when I was introduced to you and Harimari, I'd never thought of, but once it's one of those things that once you see the need for it, you really can't unsee it, because I thought of how many disposable pair, I mean, and this is even stateside beyond your world travels, especially by the label of flip-flop. I feel like when you refer to sandals, you sometimes get something that might be a little nicer, but especially on the flip-flop side of things, it's largely uncomfortable foam, plastic awfulness that is just kind of the most basic bottom of foot covering for summer wear, as opposed to something that is really comfortable. But when you get into that, it really opens up the doorway for some unique comfort options that don't exist in that space.
Yeah, and beyond that, I think also too, we had found that we weren't alone in that feeling. And when we did move back from living abroad, we had started to basically just do our own R&D on the space and on potential products. And one of those first research points was conducting focus groups. And we live in Dallas, and I went around to college campuses and handed out flyers and asked for people to come sit in front of the glass, rather, and offered them $50 and free pizza. And I hired a friend to moderate, and I just listened to what people had to say about flip-flops and sandals and just listened to their opinions and attitudes. And we asked all the questions, you know, where do you buy? How often do you buy? What do you like to buy? What do you pay for them price point wise? And I think that a lot of key themes came out of those focus groups that really kind of served as the foundation of the business and the brand. But one of them, to your point, is that there's this trend towards more conscious consumerism, and people are willing to pay more for a product that lasts longer, that stays out of the landfills. And specifically on flip-flops and sandals, you're exactly right. You can pay $10 for, you know, a great pair of foam flip-flops, but the life cycle of that is pretty quick. I mean, you're talking 2, 3, 4, 5 months, and those things are gone. You're on to the next pair. So we just found that people are willing to buy at a higher price point for premium materials that has a longer wear life. And really, that was part of the key tenet of our business.
You know, there's a few different directions I want to go with this, but I have to jump back to the beginning of what you said, because you talked about the importance of market research, the importance of focus groups. And sometimes those are steps that when you have a hard-charging entrepreneurial idea that you want to just keep blasting through and putting something out there. And the step that you talked about was really important. But what I love too is that that's really a very a decidedly scrappy approach to the focus group. You know, a lot of times we think of, you know, hiring a formal research company, and I love the idea of employing some pizza and friends in service of something that gets you this intel. In a faster, obviously probably a cheaper way as well.
Well, I think I was lucky. My former career was in politics, and we were the folks in the political campaign circles who would go out and we'd message test and research, and focus groups are certainly one of those tools that we had in our tool belt. And so it was something that was pretty familiar to me. And I brought a buddy in. I wrote all the scripts and he moderated. And we had about 100 people. And the funny thing about those focus groups, Nick, is that we didn't even tell anybody this is about flip-flops and sandals. And this, again, granted, this is in Texas and this is in the summer. But looking down at people's feet, the thing that really kind of begin to gel and cement for us is that over half of the respondents that we invited to the focus groups were wearing flip-flops and sandals. And so not only was there this kind of trend towards more conscious consumerism in terms of the wear life of the product, but there's also this trend of just flip-flops and sandals being kind of the casual footwear choice, the go-to in that realm. So and we did a little bit of research following up on it, and we found that flip-flops and sandals were really kind of second only to running shoes in terms of growth, because there is this ever-ceasing trend towards casual in the U.S., and then flip-flops tend to be kind of one of the natural recipients of that on the footwear end.
Well, that's great, and again, that intel is so important and led you to, you know, the idea and bringing this to life, taking it to market, and that's where the founder story usually goes. On the brand development side of that founder story, as this idea coalesced, at what point did you start thinking about what this brand meant and would stand for and what the stories around that brand needed to be? Because there's also a lot of strategy involved here as well, because you are, in a lot of ways, the need is there, as you just outlined, but the current behavior makes what you're trying to do kind of swim upstream against the current here a little bit. So how did you think about the messaging that needed to wrap around this new idea?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because I was talking to my wife, Lila, who helped me found this, and about the same thing. And I think that the shorter answer is I think we had a lot of ideas of what our cohesive message would be and what the brand would look like and what the visuals look like and what the voice of the brand was at the time. But it really took us a few years to hit our stride. I think that we knew going into this a few things. One, we knew that and just from focus groups and feedback and some polls we did and just from our own experiences, we knew that the biggest pain point for flip-flops was really that little piece that goes between your first and second toe. It's called the toe post. Just the pain that causes people, right? And so it's actually one of the biggest reasons why a lot of people won't even try flip-flops. And so we thought we might be able to do something about that. And that became, you know, one of our biggest messages and selling points. So we hired an engineer that used to work for a sandal brand called Teva. And he basically came on board on a project basis and designed this little memory, simple but really kind of intricate memory foam toe piece. So it's that toe post, but it's injected with memory foam, and something we filed patent for. And what it does is it basically just completely mitigates that uncomfortable break-in period, that wear on your toes. So we knew that, like, just from a product standpoint, there was that. We also knew that just looking at retailers' walls, that they're for guys specifically, it's just kind of like you said in the intros, it's iteration of black and brown, right? And that's all there was. And we didn't know if that was demand or supply driven, but from all of our focus group research and market research, we found that a lot of that was really just supply driven by the brands, because it was easier to pump out black and brown than add color. And so we kind of put some really embarrassingly bad crayon drawings up on the walls in the focus groups. And we're trying to gauge, you know, specifically guys and how they would interact with those. And we found that if you presented it in a more conservative way, a color that is, the guys were all on board with it. And so those kind of became our two calling cards for the product, which was just comfort and color. But kind of switching over to just how we would, you know, market this. The really interesting thing, just coming from an advertising background and in the previous job, was that we looked at all of the brands and all their brands in the U.S. Most of them are based in California, and they're most of the flip flop brands specifically are kind of born out of that surf culture in California. Well, the cool thing is that for us, at least, we thought, is that the growth story was not in California or on the coast any longer. The growth story buying flip flops and sandals and where you're seeing most purchases is really in the south and southeastern portions of the U.S. And so we looked at that and we said, okay, this is really interesting, because you have all the brands based in California. They're all, from a marketing standpoint, talking in the surf and beach sport and sand and ocean language. But really the customers who are buying these flip-flops and sandals are, you know, based in Nashville or Austin or Dallas or wherever it may be, Charlotte. And so we said, okay, let's flip the script on how we're talking about this. I mean, flip-flops, really, if we're being honest, have grown far beyond their kind of surf heritage days. And really, it's about mainstream now. And so that's when we said, okay, from a product standpoint, we're going to change this. From a marketing standpoint, we're going to talk in, you know, aspirational visuals and tones that match the premium quality flip-flops, but also resonate better with, you know, the people who are actually buying them. And then so then the last part of it was, from a messaging standpoint, it was, okay, we're going to do that. But we're also based in Texas. And so there's an angle there to be able to obviously take advantage of, considering that the growth story is kind of right next to us in our backyard. And so we kind of put all those things together from messaging on those three different areas, and really try to create something that was unique from what was out there, and kind of and go further against the stream and swim harder against it, and really try to be something different than what was available out there. Not only in product, kind of being a premium price point product, but based in Texas. And then, oh, by the way, you know, we have a pop of color, and, you know, we're not your grandfather's flip flop anymore. We're talking about, you know, going to the lake on the weekend and having a beer on a patio and, you know, cooking out in the backyard, but kind of all, again, all in very aspirational tones.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the seven dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics, at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard.com/speaking. Now back to the show.
So in thinking about that, you mentioned the premium product category, and it's interesting because, again, the flip-flops as they stood previously did not live there, but that category or that dimension in many different categories already exists, from, you know, luxury, high-end automotive, clothing, fashion. Did you find yourself looking to other high-end brands to say, how could we bring these aspects of the brand to a flip-flop brand?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are tons of parallels, but I think one that really resonated with us and it had kind of was just born when we were thinking about this idea was Yeti coolers and how the Cedar Brothers basically took this great product that was pretty ubiquitous, right? But had improved it with a new roto molding creation, and then basically put it on the market and did so at a premium price point. And what you saw was this, you know, instant attraction between, you know, folks from very different interest points and backgrounds. And so we said, look, if we can take some of that, and by the way, they gave us a lot of confidence because they did it from Texas. And, you know, before, I think there's a lot of feeling that, you know, only brands are born on the coast. So it's either, you know, it's got to be on the West Coast or East Coast. And that's really where brands, you know, have their most success. But it really gives a lot of confidence we could do it from here. And, you know, we were lucky that there was, you know, there were about 100 brands, 200 brands that were kind of $50 and below. But there was, you know, also a handful of brands that were, call it $100 and above. But there was a sweet spot, this kind of empty sandbox that no one was playing in price point wise, and that's kind of $50 to $100. And so we really kind of sat down in the middle of that and continued to really, you know, focus a lot of our price point strategy on that $50 to $100 range, because that's, you know, a big bridge both in price point, but it also represents a big bridge in terms of customers. And so you have kind of like the, we like to say, you have like your college flip-flops you wear everywhere. You know, you probably brought them in from high school and, you know, you kill them to death, and then you get out, you graduate college, but you're not quite ready to graduate into kind of like the 50-year-old flip-flop yet. There has to be an in-between, you know, an in-between product. And so we said to ourselves, okay, look, let's kind of stay above the fray in terms of let's kind of be the graduated flip-flop from college, but let's not go as far as being the kind of like nurse shoe, you know, 50-year-old flip-flop that we tend to see a lot of kind of the clunky in. Let's kind of settle right between.
Well, when I was talking about this, when we first started chatting, and again, I, like many, hadn't thought about this space previously, my dumbed down version of that sentiment was when I was looking at these with my wife. I said, you know, I've never had flip flops that look like a thing. You know, it looks, you know, you can go out, you can put it on with something that's not just you know, your swimsuit. That's
right.
You know, it's a little a dressier flip flop. Again, looks like a thing.
That's right. Yeah, and that was all intentional, at least on our side. So I'm glad you said that. I don't think I've heard anybody describe it so succinctly, but that's right. Exactly. We kind of, it's almost like giving people the, you know, giving customers, you know, the power to wear flip flops outside of that, the beach environment or the swimsuit environment. And really kind of take it into what they're kind of, you know, edging towards anyway, which is in toward to everyday life. But I think it's interesting you say that, because even in, you know, professionally and offices now, you're kind of, you know, where there used to be suits and dresses, now it's, you do see flip flops sometimes, and yeah. I think you'll see more of it coming in the coming years. So I think then on the personal side, for sure. I mean, you see, you know, restaurants that used to be anti-flip-flop. I remember growing up, you couldn't, if you had flip-flops, you couldn't walk into certain places. But now it's kind of like, if you have the right flip-flops on,
yeah,
you can definitely get by in that type of environment.
Yeah, I love that. The other thing I want to talk about kind of in my own journey, and kind of, again, some of this of borrowing other aspects from different brands, different sentiments out there, and pulling them into this unlikely space. When I was looking, many light bulbs went off in not thinking like this before. But when I ultimately selected a pair, it was the pair that and I'm going to get maybe some of the labeling wrong, but they are leather, and I believe they are leather made from baseball gloves, or from the same material as baseball gloves. And to me, that story, you talk about how uncomfortable from the toe post and the hard plastic and everything else about flip-flops. The other side of that, what's some of the softest material you can think of? And a broken-in ball glove is about one of the softest things. And I just, in my head, I had, if I can have that on my feet and not have it look like I'm wearing ball gloves on my feet, that sounds great.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it, almost like if we had a, you know, an entrepreneurial therapist here, I think that they would tell you that that was definitely something like from my childhood. I'd always wanted, there's this brand of baseball glove that's really well known in among kind of hardcore baseball enthusiasts, and it's called Nakona. And it's a premium glove, but mostly sell kind of between $300 and $500. I remember I would ask my mom and dad for one when I was growing up, and I mean they would just tell me to pound sand or go mow a yard or something. So never got one, but there was always that one kid on your team that had one that, you know, that would kind of like never play baseball, but you would still be insanely envious of his glove. And so never got one. And you know, a couple years out of the gates as a brand, we were looking for premium partners that would kind of accomplish two things. One, it would get us into kind of premium leather product, because we were producing leather flip flops, but not really high-end leather. And I think the other thing we were looking to do is just tap a passion audience and to help kind of bring them into the Hari Mari tent. And one of my buddies came in and he was talking about his Nakona baseball glove. I'm like, you know what? I need to give those guys a call. And so I'm just super fortunate. I rang up the CEO of Nakona and I just said, hey, look, this is what we do. It does, you know, doesn't compete with what you guys do, but we could certainly marry your premium ball glove leather with our flip flops. I think we'd have something really interesting there. And thankfully, I mean, he probably thought I was crazy at the time, and he said yes. And let's just see what it looks like before we say yes. And so we produced a bunch of samples, and you know, 3 years later, it's been one of our most successful collaborations. And there's just this insane passion for that brand. And deservedly so. And so it was a really cool deal, and it continues to be a very cool deal for us. We're kind of checking these boxes of audiences we want to be able to expose Hari Mari to, but in the same, you know, similar way and selfish way, just kind of, you know, basically take care of a childhood dream that kind of finally came to fruition.
I love that story, and that it came from a childhood dream. And I can say firsthand that it's as comfortable as it sounds. In thinking about building the brand and changing behavior, what were some critical steps in steering people away from the plastic? And again, maybe it's probably a different customer, but that as well, of developing the middle space, the 50 to 100 space that wasn't there. How did you pull them in and make them realize that they had a flip-flop problem?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think part of it was that we had to talk about the problem first, you know, and for us, the pain points were twofold. One is on the lower end, it's just kind of buying things that quickly wear out and are thrown away and are disposable in some senses. And then on the higher end, it's just price point. And so, you know, I think a lot of this, funnily enough, you know, just like most business plans, like our business plans when we first, you know, were kind of brainstorming this are just laughable now. I mean, we are nowhere near what we thought we were going to do. In fact, we thought we were basically going to create a flip-flop version of like a Warby Parker or Bonobos, where, you know, we would send five pairs of flip-flops out to folks and they'd keep two and, you know, return the three and pay for the two that they kept. And what we found, again, from our market research and from our focus group specifically, is that people really wanted to see, touch, feel, and test drive flip-flops and footwear first before they give it a shot online. It's really unique. It's unlike glasses or shirts or pants, things that, you know, we kind of say, yeah, I'd buy that today in a heartbeat. But footwear specifically, people's feet are so unique that they really need to see it in stores. So part of our strategy was really getting into stores and getting into retail and kind of, you know, quickly changing our distribution strategy from all D2C to retail to wholesale as well. And so I was super lucky that my wife had a sales background. We talked about it. She said, oh, no problem. I'll come on board and I'll help out with the wholesale end. And I mean, within our first 4 months, we were, you know, in about 40 stores kind of in Texas and surrounding states. But part of that pitch to those stores was, look, you've got XYZ brands that are kind of $50 and below. You've got, you know, one or two brands, $100 and above. But you're really, again, missing this entire customer gap in between. And so that was that missing customer, and retailers seeing that they're missing that customer and seeing they're missing kind of a better tiered price strategy was really part of the solution, at least in the initial phases of our brand. But I think that as we continue to gain traction on the retail side, the really interesting part for us is like, how does that then, you know, how does that translate into our branding communications and how we're talking about it specifically in video or digital and our social platforms? How does that come through? And I think for us, it came through naturally because we knew we were talking to a certain audience, and that happens to be kind of this, you know, 22 to, you know, call it 45-year-old audience that mimics exactly what we were basically selling to stores. And for us, that became kind of this story about, you know, yes, buying quality product, about keeping it for a long time, but about, you know, having your feet kind of take you on these adventures that are in this prime part of your life, and using, you know, your feet to propel you to those places. And it might be somewhere foreign and exotic, or it might just be, like I said, to your backyard and, you know, and having a, you know, a few beers with friends, and whatever that is to each person, that's unique. But it became kind of how we tell a story about the brand and then connect it to, you know, our core audience and our target audience.
I love that. So as we start to wrap up here, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Yeah, there are a lot. I mean, I think that I could give you a whole list. I'm a brand geek, and I love them. I have a few. One is I love this. There's a belt company called La Matera that makes these incredibly great woven belts that are Argentinian in style and just super cool and quality product through and through. But a lot of the brands I'm big fans of too are just local Texas brands. And so if you look at, you know, brands that are complementary to our flip-flops, I love this one called Cricket out of Austin. They're good brand buddies of ours, but they make these retro polo shirts that kind of remind you of, you know, Jack Nicklaus, you know, coming up, to the 18th green on Augusta in the 1970s. It's a good one. And then, another one is another brand out of Austin called Howler Brothers. And they do a lot of, you know, outdoor, surf meets Austin, Texas type vibe, in all their clothing and headgear. So it's, those are three of the brands that I really, look to and love.
Well, those are great brands and sound like a lot of smiles. Jeremy, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Yes, harimari.com, HARIMARI.com is our brand's website. We're also carried in, like you said, about 1,000 retailers in all 50 states. And those range from, you know, Nordstrom to Zappos to Neiman's. So folks can check us out there as well.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. Jeremy, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thanks for having me, Nick. Really appreciate it.
As a reminder, you can find links to those show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. If you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. For more on me, please visit nickwestergaard.com. That's Westergaard with two A's. Until next week, I am Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.